From Beaver Falls to Countersport, Jersey Shore to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, mountains of campaign cash, millions spent on lobbying, a taxpayer-funded bailout. Sounds like something that would happen in Pennsylvania. But First Energy in Ohio succeeded where Exelon failed. David Taylor hosts a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And U.S. Senator Pat Toomey is fighting a proposed change to the nation's Medicare regulations that would stifle the development of new medicines. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Craft beer lovers are now paying more to enjoy their favorite brew, this thanks to a new tax that went into effect this past week. The so-called use tax will add 1.5% to the 6% sales tax levied in most counties. It will be higher in Allegheny County, which has a 7% sales tax. Most craft brewers will have no choice but to pass the new tax along to customers in the form of higher prices, because state law does not permit the new tax to be itemized on a sales receipt. In other beer news, two iconic Pennsylvania companies have teamed up to offer a new product. Yingling and Hershey have unveiled a chocolate porter. The brew will only be available on tap. It marks the first collaboration with another company in the 190-year-long history of Yingling, which, by the way, is the nation's oldest brewery. It is also Hershey's first ever beer. If you have not yet traded in your old driver's license for a real ID license, you now have less than a year to get that done. After October 1, 2020, a real ID will be required to enter any federal facility, such as a courthouse or military base. You also need the real ID to board a commercial airliner. The Real ID Act was passed in response to the attacks of September 11, 2001, with the goal of improving security on flights and at federal properties. Should college athletes be paid? Two state representatives from Allegheny County think they should. They've introduced a bill that would allow those participating in college sports to hire an agent, sign endorsements, and earn pay, just like the pros. Universities are raking in big bucks from their marquee sports teams. Students can receive scholarships and other educational assistance, but the proposed new law would open up a wide range of new compensation options. The bill has garnered a mixed response. Much debate lies ahead. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Exelon unleashed a massive lobbying effort to get a huge taxpayer-funded bailout for the now-closed Three Mile Island nuclear power plant. They failed in that effort. But in neighboring Ohio, First Energy succeeded in raiding the public treasury. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to take a look at the Ohio experience. He is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Ryan Augsberger from the Ohio Manufacturers Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Business in Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Happy to be here again, David. Thanks.
Well, we have missed you very much. Thank you for coming back to see us. So, you know, one of the issues that we've been grappling with in Harrisburg has been defending competitive markets for electricity. That's one of Pennsylvania's, I would say, one of our greatest policy accomplishments, is that going back to the Ridge administration, that we transferred into competitive markets so that we could, consumers could get the benefit of an open marketplace and to have competitively priced electricity. So before we went into competitive markets, that Pennsylvania electricity was about 15 to 20% above the national average, and today we're about 5 to 8% below the national average, and that's a win.
Yes, I think Pennsylvania has a reputation around the country of actually doing things right in this regard. And as the listeners know, we don't recognize Pennsylvania as doing things right all the time. But in this case, I think we got it right.
Yes.
We have competitive electric markets. It's brought prices down for consumers. And we have been successful in that regard.
So it's one of those things where, you know, if it, as the saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave
right.
well enough alone. But, you know, as the listeners have heard us describe over time, that one of the threats to our competitive markets and these customer savings has been a subsidy for the nuclear industry. And that's something that, you know, despite the fact that Three Mile Island has now been, you know, unplugged, that, you know, the threat of the nuclear industry looking for a subsidy, fouling up competitive markets is still very real for us. And that's why I wanted to welcome our very special guest to the program today, one of my favorite manufacturing allies, Ryan Augsburger, Vice President of the Ohio Manufacturers Association. Ryan, thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Dave, glad to be with our friends to the east. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I wish it was a happier topic, but this is something that that our friends in Ohio have been grappling with. That can you just give an overview of what has happened to competitive markets in Ohio?
Well, that's the right place to begin. And for Ohio, the journey began probably around the same time as Pennsylvania. Our deregulation occurred in the year 1999 and was slow to emerge after that bill passed. But once it finally did in the 2010s, we quick saw the benefits of competition that our members had initially envisioned and why we supported deregulation of generation at the time. So customers are saving big money on the generation portion of their power bills. In Ohio, a study has just come out by a couple of professors, one at Ohio State and Cleveland State, who have expertise on this, and they've clocked the savings to customers at $24 billion since the year 2011.
Wow.
So it's more than $3 billion a year is what customers are saving from a competitive market. And along with that come the benefits of competition. Beyond the cost savings, you get part of the reason you save that is because you get new lower cost entrants that come into the market.
Exactly.
Power more cost effectively. That may have the effect of pushing out old, more expensive generators in the market. This is how the free market and capitalism work.
Exactly. And it's, you know, I often say that the market function in the economy is a lot like the kidney function in the body. It's what, you know, what separates what we need from what we don't need, what we want from what we don't want. We've also seen those benefits here in Pennsylvania, where over the last 2 years we've had 10 new natural gas-fired power plants come into the market, and that has helped to, you know, again, to lower prices for consumers. But, you know, sort of this is where the twist comes in the story, that unfortunately for our friends in Ohio, the nuclear industry got what they wanted, and that, you know, you guys are looking now at the death of competitive markets.
It's not an understatement. The bailout of these failed nuclear plants is going to harm Ohio's economic future because it is going to deter future investment by businesses that are willing to put capital at risk to serve our energy needs, not just in Ohio. Electrons don't know state boundaries. They
Yes. They
fly through the PJM region, which Ohio and Pennsylvania are both served by, and that's the crying shame with this. The legislation is anti-market, and it will deter those new companies from choosing to put a new, whether it's natural gas or other form, could be renewable energy. The more you give an advantage to one company, then that one company can undersell, which hardships the other for-profit companies from being able to profit and meet their profitability goals.
So here in Pennsylvania, when we've had the proponents of nuclear energy trying to sell the bailout as a pro-environmental plan, because obviously nuclear energy is no carbon.
Never mind the plutonium.
Right. We won't talk about that. Right. But that was not the case necessarily here in Ohio, where you are, right? Because actually, the environmental groups were not in favor of that bill, which I find a sort of an interesting twist on things, because there are subsidies, for example, for coal in your bill, right, in your law that just recently passed. So I'm just wondering about the environmentalist aspect of this, and how in Pennsylvania that some were some were sort of in favor of it. But in Ohio, you couldn't make that case because I believe that there was more than clean energy in that bill.
Yeah, didn't it wipe out the energy, the alternative energy portfolio standard?
And energy efficiency
standards.
Yes,
in Ohio, we had a broad coalition of opponents that included customer groups like manufacturers and senior citizens and other businesses that depend on electricity, competitive generators and companies that want to provide market electricity generation. But we also had labor groups, free market groups, and very importantly, as was mentioned, environmental groups. Virtually all the environmental groups, national and statewide, came in a chorus of opposition to the Ohio nuclear bailout bill. Broad opposition.
Well, and Ryan, I want to touch back on something important. The you and I are both advocates for manufacturing, for the people who make things. And of course, manufacturing is the engine that drives our economy. It's the sector that adds the most value and it has the strongest multiplier effect on job creation. One of the key inputs for manufacturing is energy. No matter what it is that you're making, manufacturers consume a lot of energy. And in fact, for some manufacturers, many manufacturers, that energy is their number one cost input. And this is why we have been, so adamant in our support for keeping competitive markets that, by the way, we paid for through the transition process, because this goes directly to our ability to compete. And, we are completely agnostic as to how the electrons get into the grid. All we want is market-based pricing for energy. And so I would think that, losing that dynamic in Ohio would be very, very bad for manufacturers.
Yeah, the opposition to this was, as I said, very widespread. But I will say the proponents were able to enlist some parties to give cover to their side, and that did have the effect of lulling policymakers who ultimately voted for it narrowly. But it lulled stakeholders and policymakers into thinking this bill was actually a good thing for Ohio. But there's just no doubt about it. The only winners were the owners of the nuclear power plants or other generation winners that will get a bailout from this bill. Everyone else loses.
To David's point about the impact on manufacturers and businesses, I think I remember hearing that the rates or the assessment was capped for residential customers of energy, and it wasn't for businesses, for smaller businesses. Can you explain a little bit how about that assessment's going to affect businesses?
So there are some caps that are described in the bill for all classes of customers, but together with that is an awful lot of discretionary language where the state agency will determine how these rates and caps go into effect. In some cases, we've discovered that the cost will be assessed per meter. Well, if you're a manufacturer, you might have multiple meters. We found one company that has 36 meters on their plant.
Oh, wow.
So even if you have a capped amount, if you're paying it times 36, you're talking about some real money. And then there's other kinds of businesses that have multiple meters. But I just say that as an example of we don't know what the cost of the bill will be because so much of this is left to the discretion of a state agency. And we know that the amount of revenue that this thing is intended to provide to the owners of the nuclear power plants is $150 million per year, that we know how much has to be funded. Therefore, if you work it backwards by how many meters there are, you can see it's going to be higher than what they've advertised. Somebody will pay more.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania, and our special guest, Ryan Augsburger from the Ohio Manufacturers Association. So, Ryan, my understanding is that while the nuke bailout in Ohio, it passed legislatively, it was signed by the governor, it remains very unpopular among the citizenry, and that's why you folks in Ohio have an initiative and referendum type system that we don't have in Pennsylvania. That in Ohio, that petitions are being circulated for a ballot question that would repeal the bailout.
That's correct. By October 21st, the bill is slated to go into effect, and so that's also the deadline for the campaign committee that is seeking to obtain the necessary number of signatures from half of our 88 counties. If they can obtain the requisite number of signatures, then there will be a referendum where the citizens of Ohio will have an opportunity to determine if this bill should remain a law or whether it should be overruled or repealed. That, if those signatures are collected, that election would occur in November of 2020, so quite a bit ahead. But there is a lot of consternation happening right now during the signature collection.
Well, what's happening?
We've never seen a lobbying effort like we saw in House Bill 6, and the amount of paid media that was being expended by the bailout recipients in order to help pressure lawmakers into voting for the bill. Well, it should not therefore surprise us that in the post-passage phase in this referendum signature gathering, those same bailout recipients are funding a campaign to try to deter Ohioans from signing the petition, knowing that if it gets to the referendum phase, it's likely Ohio voters will see through this and will repeal the bill.
So I also heard that there was a legal challenge to the petition, which is another way of going about trying to prevent this petition from this referendum from making it onto the ballot. Is that also true?
Yeah, Rebecca, one of the tactics to prevent a referendum challenge from going is to try to go to the court system and have the courts invalidate the referendum before they can even collect the signatures on the grounds that the bill, because it imposes a new customer fee on all Ohio customers to pay for the nuclear power generation, that bailout rider, so it will be assessed on your power bill. The defenders of the bill, the bailout recipients, they're going to court to argue that the new rider on your power bill is actually a tax, and under Ohio law, if it's a tax, then a bill is not allowed to be used in a referendum. You can't launch a referendum to repeal a bill that is enacting a tax. We don't think it's a tax. I don't think I'm confident the court will see through that. So we think this referendum is going to be on the ballot in November of 2020. We think they're going to get the signatures. We think the effort is going to withstand any legal challenge.
Well, and it's just, and again, it's remarkable the great lengths that the nuclear companies have gone to. And I've got to mention, for the benefit of our Pennsylvania listeners, that one of the central players in your nuke bailout was a Pennsylvania a company that operates in Pennsylvania also, which is First Energy. And so they have facilities, including the facility in Beaver Valley, which I guess is going to be the next poster child for why we need to have to overthrow competitive markets in Pennsylvania for the benefit of that particular facility, despite the fact that that facility is making money. The whole thing is bizarre, but that particular company has been exceptionally aggressive in this whole undertaking.
You make some great points there. Let me take First Energy, and we've been watching your debates in Pennsylvania very closely for some time, though. First Energy has been attempting to require Ohio ratepayers to subsidize not just the two nuclear power plants that they formerly owned in Ohio, but also the plant in Beaver. They had tried this at the state government level through the Public Utilities Commission in some rate cases. And when that didn't happen, to their satisfaction anyway, then they went and got some state legislation That was in the prior General Assembly session, and that didn't get completed, so it died. But then they came back this session, and House Bill 6 is now reality. The question, though, you bring up, Dave, about the profitability of the nuclear power plants is not getting enough attention. We've conducted an analysis. The former economist from PJM has conducted an analysis and finding that the nuclear power plants are not losing money today when you factor in the debt that they're carrying under the FirstEnergy's various decisions over the years. That drags them down. But if you look at their cash flow, they could be profitable in FirstEnergy Solutions, which owns the three nuclear power plants, emerges. It's entirely likely that they will be profitable. So why would our state's citizenry be required to bail out companies that are profitable?
It just
and
makes
that's
no
exactly
sense.
What we think is happening here.
That just makes no sense at all, and it's an outrage, and it just can't be allowed. It can't be allowed to stand in Ohio, and it can't be allowed to come to pass in Pennsylvania. Our whole system is based on, that markets should be governed by profit and loss, and that this is what generates the efficiencies that come from being under those competitive pressures. That when you have government put its thumb on the scale and pick winners and losers, that whole market function is undermined and corroded, and we all suffer for it. So, oh my goodness. Well, this has been, at the same time that it's distressing to hear about all of this, the truth is the truth is the truth. And, as the listeners of the program always, hear me say, representative self-government is not a spectator sport, that we have to, live life with our brains turned on and pay attention to what's happening and exercise our citizenship actively so that we can get good outcomes from the legislative process and from that process of self-government. So, Ryan, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for not just for taking time to be with us, but for what you do for the good people of Ohio. Where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Well, thank you, Dave, and here on all your comments. We are great to have great allies with you and Rebecca at Pennsylvania. Ohio Manufacturers Association, you can find us at ohiomfg.com.
Outstanding. And Rebecca, again, welcome back to the show. So lovely to be
Thank
with you. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the work that you folks are doing?
They can find us at nfib.com or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 for PMA Perspective. From Rebecca and me, thanks again to Ryan for joining us, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Senator Pat Toomey continues to protect Pennsylvania's seniors by standing strong for free market principles. He was one of the few members of the Senate Finance Committee to vote against a disastrous Medicare reform plan. The package contains one particularly damaging provision that, if enacted, would discourage drug companies from developing state-of-the-art medicines. The Finance Committee's plan would restructure Medicare's Part D prescription drug benefit. More than 1 million Pennsylvanians, mostly seniors, but also people with disabilities, rely on this program for affordable drug coverage. Part D is a rarity among entitlement programs. Rather than providing coverage directly, the government allows private insurers to design and administer Part D plans. Insurers compete against each other to sell their plans, which are federally subsidized, to Medicare beneficiaries. This competition has tapped down spending without sacrificing quality. In its first decade, Part D cost almost $350 billion less than originally projected. Premiums have remained stable over the years, and more than 8 in 10 Part D beneficiaries are happy with their plans. Unfortunately, the Finance Committee package could cripple this program. The bill would impose an inflation penalty, which would effectively prohibit pharmaceutical companies from raising Part D drug prices in reaction to changing market dynamics. Here's how it would work. Let's say a drug costs $100 when it is first released. But more patients and doctors than expected want the drug. So the following year, the manufacturer responds to this higher demand by raising the price to $108. Under the proposal, the manufacturer would owe the government a rebate for the difference between the new price and the original price after adjusting for inflation. For example, if inflation increased 2% that year, the manufacturer would owe the government $6. That's $108 minus $102. Capping drug prices might sound like a good idea. After all, Americans in both parties are fed up with expensive pharmacy bills. But the penalty would harm seniors in two big ways. First, an inflation penalty might actually increase beneficiaries' total spending. Right now, the insurers who sponsor Part D plans negotiate with drug manufacturers for rebates. Often, insurers receive rebates that largely cancel out the impact of any price hikes. Under the proposal, some of those rebates would go to the government rather than to insurers. That means higher net costs for insurers and ultimately higher premiums for beneficiaries. Second, the inflation penalty would cripple medical research, thereby hindering the development of future treatments. On average, it costs more than $2 billion to bring a new drug to market. And most experimental drugs, 88% in fact, failed to make it through clinical trials and the rigorous FDA approval process. Firms only make these risky investments because a single successful drug could recoup their development costs and potentially deliver a return to investors. When governments prevent drug companies from adjusting prices based on market demand, it makes it harder for those companies to break even and fund future projects, as well as reward shareholders. Investors quickly stop funding medical research. To see price controls in action, just look across the pond. Back in the 1970s, Europe invented more than half of the world's new medicines. But European nations then imposed more and more price caps. Research companies and investors increasingly flocked to America, which maintained a comparatively free market. Now Europe produces less than a third of new medicines. Price caps would devastate Penn's Woods in particular. Currently, more than 7 million Pennsylvanians suffer from one chronic condition. 3 million have two or more. These patients need new drugs to treat or potentially cure their illnesses. They can't afford for the drug development pipeline to run dry. Fortunately, Senator Toomey stood up for those patients by voting against the Finance Committee's proposal. Let's hope his colleagues come to their senses before Congress inadvertently jacks up seniors' premiums and hampers drug research. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHHS-FM in Havertown, along with WCCS-AM and WLCY-FM in Indiana, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.